This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Wednesday, April 23rd. I'm Tom Rogers. Coming up, we begin a three-part series on water in central Illinois. Also, we'll get a forecast from AM 580's Mike Sola first, today's news. Prosecutors have flipped another witness who can aid in their fraud case against Tony Rezko. The witness could also provide testimony that Governor Rod Blagojevich was selling appointments to state boards. Robert Wildebor reports.
Aliata pleaded guilty yesterday, admitting that he lied to the FBI and submitted false tax returns. He's looking at 12 to 18 months for those crimes, though he may get less than that. In addition, the government has agreed to drop another case against Otta that could have resulted in 20 years. Otta's end of the deal requires him to cooperate with prosecutors in any case they're pursuing. That could very likely include their case against Rezko, but Otta has plenty to say about the governor as well. In his plea agreement, Otta says he funneled $125,000 through Rezko to Public Official A, who's been identified in other cases as Blagojevich. In return, Otta says that Public Official A promised him a job where he could, quote, make a lot of money. Otta was appointed the executive director of the Illinois Finance Authority by Blagojevich in 2004. The governor has not been accused of any wrongdoing. I'm Robert Wildebor.
A Champaign County Electoral Board will decide if an objection to a state representative candidate can go forward. At issue is the status of GOP candidate Frank Calabrese, who was slated earlier this month to challenge Democratic 103rd District Representative Naomi Jacobson. The objection claims that Calabrese's slating was improper because the district's Republican organization didn't file a certain form with the state in time for the objector, Pat Devaney, to view it. Calabrese's attorney, John Maloney, says the form in question was mailed in separately, and he's not sure why Democrats would challenge Calabrese, a 20-year-old University of Illinois student.
And this is just games, I would, and it was Naomi's advantage to run it. They're not even going to knock the student off the ballot. They may then, with this, because he'd filed it in time. I mean, the party could nominate somebody else.
Devaney's not been reached for comment. Jacobson says the objection was filed without her knowledge. Champaign County Clerk Mark Sheldon says the county's electoral board will hear the case because the 103rd district lies completely within the county's borders. A hearing is scheduled for May 2nd. The 10th annual Ebert Fest in Champaign-Urbana will apparently go on without Roger Ebert in the crowd. The Urbana-born movie critic says in his Chicago Sun-Times blog this morning that he's staying in a Chicago hospital on his doctor's advice. Ebert broke a hip during an exercise session last month. He's been recovering from several surgeries for cancer, which have left him unable to speak. But Ebert had held out hope that he could make it to Champaign for the weekend movie festival that begins tonight. He wrote that he's especially disappointed that he can't attend because of this year's lineup, but he'll resume writing movie reviews during his recovery. The Champaign City Council has tentatively agreed to sell the Lone Star Masonic Lodge building on North First Street to a downtown bakery. As AM 580's Jim Meadows reports, the council's decision came despite pleas by supporters to let the Urban League use the building.
The Champaign County Urban League wanted the Lone Star Lodge building for its offices and a small business incubator. But the agency wanted the building for free, not what Champaign officials had in mind. The city acquired the Lone Star building after the Lone Star Masonic Lodge defaulted on city loans. City Councilwoman Gina Jackson says they need to sell, not give the building away, to recover some of their losses.
And people will argue that the Urban League is better for the community in the long run, which it is, but not at the expense that we've already expended in that building.
Champaign council members voted to negotiate a sale of the Lone Star building to Bacara Bakery for $225,000, the highest offer out of six proposals. Owner Seika Chuk wants to move her bakery out of her small Neal Street restaurant to a spot where she can serve both walk-in and wholesale customers and do catering. Meanwhile, Urban League board chair Sandy Jones says they'll now look at opening a business incubator at their current downtown location. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
The Illinois State Gaming Board has blocked a proposal to expand casinos' hours of operation. Casino owners requested the board allow them to operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They said expanding the hours would bolster sagging revenues. Judge Aaron Jaffe is the chairman of the gaming board. He says money isn't the only consideration.
We heard from a lot of people, and especially people who were concerned about individuals who were compulsive gamblers who might not leave the premises and go round the clock.
Casinos in Illinois can currently operate up to 22 hours a day. Jaffe says he doesn't think the two additional hours would give owners the revenue bump they're looking for. Officials with the Federal Emergency Management Agency are urging flood victims in Iroquois and Livingston counties to apply for aid before the deadline runs out in 2 weeks. Earlier this year, floods in the Watseka and Pontiac area damaged hundreds of homes and businesses. FEMA spokesperson Hannah Vick says grants are available for home repairs or temporary housing needs like hotels, as well as medical equipment that was lost in the flooding. She says homeowners, businesses, and renters should also apply for Small Business Administration loans.
If they're approved for a loan, then that's great. They can take it or they cannot take it. If they're denied for a loan from the Small Business Administration, they might be eligible for more assistance from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. So at that point in time, we really want people to not throw out their loan applications, but to return those just as soon as they can, too, with the deadline approaching of May 6th.
Vick says so far more than 1,200 people have applied for the approximately $9 million in funds reserved for Iroquois and Livingston counties. Residents can call to register for flood assistance at 1-800-621-FEMA. That's 621-F-E-M-A. For the latest newscast online, go to will.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Tom Rogers. Making sure a community has plenty of water can be a challenge. Often it involves preparing for the worst, such as a severe drought, but being prepared can be costly. In the first part of our series on Central Illinois water issues, Illinois Public Radio's Sean Crawford looks at how much is enough.
For most individuals, water is as close as turning on a faucet. Whether drinking it, using it to wash dishes, do laundry, or to bathe, our lives are dependent on water, and yet many cities walk a perilous line when it comes to their supply. It's a problem that surfaces more during hot and dry weather. Welcome to Lake Decatur. Built in 1922, the lake provides water for Decatur residents and a few other neighboring towns. But last summer, during a drought, lake levels dipped so low, Decatur city officials decided it was time to take action. They put restrictions on water use. Decatur Mayor Paul Osborne admits it was an unpopular move.
You get complaints that, you know, you can conserve water. You mean I can't water my lawn? It's like, that's the, you know, my lawn's going to die if I don't water it. And it's, can't wash my car. Car is really dirty. And so there's not this conservation conscious public in many cases. A lot of the complaints were just like that. And people, you know, recoil at that.
The situation came at the same time Decatur was actively looking at a second water source. There's a growing need for water, especially among industry, like Archer Daniels Midland, Caterpillar, and Tate & Lyle. Mayor Osborne says to maintain the jobs from those plants, Decatur must look ahead and make sure its water supply is sufficient. The city purchased a small lake nearby, but it's also studying the creation of a larger body of water. There's a hitch, however, the price tag. Possibly up to $50 million to build another lake. While discussions are still ongoing, Osborne says the thought of higher water bills has a lot of residents questioning whether the project is worthwhile.
I think most of the objections in the future, if that's the decision that we will make, will be from people that just don't want to pay for it through their water rates. You know, as long as you can turn your spigot on, you have water, you're not paying much for it, then why should we increase that? We probably don't even need another lake. I think there's an aspect of this, too, that people really need to understand. We had a mild drought this summer, and not nearly as serious as it could have been. And we had our industries and others conserving water. If that drought would have been extended, ADM and our major employers would have been sending people home or laying people off.
Osborne says it's possible ADM could help cover part of the cost of building another lake. That would lessen the blow to ratepayers. Decatur already gets some help from ADM to pay for another water supply project, the dredging of Lake Decatur.
The controls here beside her, this lever here. When she pushed that button down like that, that would allow that.
Joe Niehiser is the Lake Foreman Indicator. Like he's showing off an expensive investment, a blue and white boat nicknamed the Commodore, which has rotors at the front end churning up sediment from the lake floor. Most of this was once topsoil that's eroded and found itself a new home underwater. As the sediment accumulates, less water can be stored in the lake. That's a problem. It means the supply of water available to the city is smaller. Dredging can help, according to Niehiser, but it's expensive. Niehiser says in previous dredging work, portions of the lake have seen capacity increase as much as 6%. That might not sound like a lot, but he says every bit helps. The sediment is brought up from the bottom of the lake, sent through a pipe traveling more than 2 miles, where it's dumped. Before this most recent round of dredging is completed, Niehiser expects it will amount to more than 150,000 semi-truckloads. In other words, Decatur has found itself in the dirt business.
We give it away right now to individuals that want it. Within a certain mile radius of our property, we will deliver it. However, they are doing a study to determine on the use.
Niehiser says the dirt has done well in field trials for agricultural use and could be marketed to farmers. No matter what happens, he says increasing lake capacity is worth any additional work getting rid of the sediment. Over in Springfield, where there's been talk for decades about a second lake, the city has still yet to act on that plan. And there are plenty who say Lake Springfield, the town's water source, is sufficient. Don Hanrahan says with a few changes, Springfield would be fine when it comes to the quantity of available water.
The city has never actually tried water conservation. They use an old-fashioned rate structure that rewards waste instead of penalizing it. So we don't really even know that we need any water supply.
Hanrahan is an opponent to building a second water source dubbed Hunter Lake. He's concerned about the environmental damage that would be done during construction. He says if the city wants to have an insurance policy for water, there are gravel pits outside of the town that hold enough to help Springfield in the case of a severe drought. The conditions Springfield, Decatur, and other central Illinois communities experienced last year caused problems with the water supply, but it was far from a worst-case scenario. Illinois has seen more extended drought periods in previous decades. The early 1950s stand out as one of the most severe. As lakes dried up, some water users were asked to curtail baths, showers, and even limit flushing of toilets. Vern Knapp is a hydrologist with the Illinois State Water Survey.
Droughts don't announce themselves at the beginning. Also, at the end, they don't predict themselves to say, okay, I'm going to quit. You get down to the end of the drought period and the rain hasn't come to replenish the reservoir, people are going to be worried quite a bit. We could have a drought situation come on that is worse than anything we've had.
As the drought of the 50s subsided, towns like Springfield and Decatur began talking about additional water. Springfield Mayor Tim Davlin says the plan has languished on the desks of mayors and aldermen for years.
I think I was in high school, maybe it was grade school when it was first talked about, so you know, it's been in the planning stage for a long time, and now it's up to governmental agencies.
That includes the U.S. EPA, which must grant a construction permit. So far, that's yet to happen, but Davlin says despite the obstacles, it's too important to keep putting off dealing with the issue.
Electricity, you can go and you can buy from the grid. We can end up getting power hooked in here made from California, from Nebraska, but you can't bring water in. I mean, that's a source that is, you know, our most valuable resource that we have, and so it's the reason why I think we've talked so much so long about it is because it is that important. You just can't ship water in.
Springfield's decision when it comes to water affects not only its residents but those in other towns who purchase water from the capital city. But soon some communities will stop buying from Springfield. They include Chatham, which is going to tap into an aquifer in northern Sangamon County and pipe water to the village south of Springfield. Even though Lake Springfield connects to the Chatham village limits, Mayor Tom Gray says this is the best decision for residents. He says as Springfield has consistently raised rates on the water it sells and put limitations on where Chatham can extend service, it's time for his village to go out on its own.
If you don't have water, you can't grow with population. We're really good on maintaining our infrastructure, and without that water, how are we going to afford to do that? It's an investment in the community that we've got to make.
Water decisions made today will be far-reaching. They'll affect generations to come in central Illinois, but towns are walking a tightrope, balancing costs with the need for a sufficient water supply, all the time hoping they don't run out of luck. I'm Sean Crawford.
And our series continues tomorrow with a report on the quality of water in central Illinois. After some parts of the area got rain yesterday, we'll see the sunshine return all across the two-state area. Today's highs ranging from 64 in northern Illinois near Lake Michigan to 84 in the far south. A high in Champaign-Urbana, around 80 degrees, with winds from the northeast to east at 7 to 14 miles an hour. Mike Sola says for tonight, it'll be clear to partly cloudy with a few showers possible in southwest Illinois around sunrise. Lows tonight from 48 in northern Indiana to 61 in western Illinois. And for tomorrow, in the state of Illinois, partly to mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms, most numerous from west central through northern Illinois. In Indiana, still partly to mostly sunny. Highs tomorrow from 70 in the north to 82 in the south. 81 the forecast high for tomorrow in Champaign-Urbana with some afternoon showers and thunderstorms. Looking ahead, Thursday night, occasional showers and thunderstorms. Same thing for Friday with a high Friday of 78 degrees. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Wednesday, April 23rd. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, and other helpful information on our website, will.illinois.edu. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.